Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison monthly meeting. Our speaker today is Richard Russell.
Thanks, Bob. I'm here to talk about the Atheist Lounge, which is a project of Madison Skeptics Meetup. Madison Skeptics Meetup started, I want to say, about 4 or 5 years ago. I was not a member of it at the inception, but the idea behind it was to provide a place for people who were dubious about, who were skeptical about dubious claims, to get together and talk about them. Suspect claims that we're talking about are things like extrasensory perception, space aliens, water dowsing, various superstitions like four-leaf clovers, and so on. And it tended to be a pretty pro-science group at the time. But of course, a large group of claims that come essentially without evidence have to deal with religion. And so the skeptics group attracted a whole bunch of atheists and agnostics who said, this stuff seems a little fishy to us. At one point about 3 years ago, got an infusion of a particularly active person from who had been recently in New York and was active with the atheist group in New York, and said, we had this thing in New York called the Atheist Lounge, where we'd get together once a month and we'd talk about some subject that seemed to be of interest to atheists, and it would be a free-for-all discussion, and we'd all have a good time. Why don't we do that here? Can we do that under the rubric of Madison Skeptics? And we said, sure, we can do that. And so we did. We fired them up. We formed a group called, well, not a group, a subgroup within Madison Skeptics called Atheist Lounge. And every month we would put on a different presentation. We started off I can't remember if this is the one that started off originally at the Rigby or if we just got going right away at Portobello, but before too long, we ended up at Portobello in the Cellar Bar the last Thursday night of every month, and we had a different topic every month. So the sheet that I've passed around talks about the 12 subjects that we discussed during the year, calendar year 2017. I've also brought a couple of notebooks with me. One is the Atheist Lounges of 2016, because we first started doing them in January of 2016. And there's a handout for just about every one of these. And so the notebook contains a sample of the handout for each one. So I'm just going to rattle off the topics we covered in 2016, then we'll go on to the ones that we talked about in 2017, and then we'll talk about how we go about doing the presentation, the nature of the discussion, so on. So here's what we did in 2016. January, moral decisions. February, ritual and secular life. We did that as a sort of run-up to Easter. March, my own go-from-Jesus moment, as opposed to the come-to-Jesus moment that a lot of religious groups have. April, general semantics. May, authoritarianism. June, happiness. July, pareidolia. You were interested in pareidolia, and so look at the handout on July in this book. Pareidolia. What is pareidolia? It's the sense that there's patterns, significant patterns to be found in things like numbers or pieces of toast or things like that. It's pattern recognition where there really was...
Brussels sprouts,
yes. Cruciate vegetables. They have a cross, apparently blessed by Jesus at some point. August, in what was then the most fractious political campaign in my lifetime, we talked about anger and irrational behavior. We thought that was highly topical because the election was coming up in November. September, staying civilized. Why is it, despite all sorts of provocation and the fact that we're packed together like sardines in large cities, why is it we don't all kill each other? What keeps us civilized? October, how we decide. 8 possible methods of decision-making, the last and least of which is faith. November, ritual and secular life again, because there we were, Thanksgiving with Christmas coming up, so we talked about rituals. And December, back at you, how to respond to the war on Christmas allegations. So these are the handouts. They're organized by month here. I'll pass that around. Here's what we talked about in 2017. January, get on that soul train, where we talked about the common belief in the existence of souls and where does it come from, what significance does it have. February, eternity, a dang long time. I mean, do you want eternal life? Do you really want to live forever? Well, stop and think. I mean, forever, that's a dang long time. Do you really want to be alive that long? Had a good discussion on that one. March, ceremonial deism, bane or blessing. April, you're obviously an immoral degenerate, which is, you know, the sort of things that people would look at as atheists and say, well, you have no moral grounding because you don't believe in any absolute standards of morality, therefore you're obviously an immoral degenerate. I mean, you know, we all said, yeah, sure, okay, we'll go with that. May, questioning. So this is one, it's sort of like a meta-skeptic presentation, because skeptics question everything. But do we question questioning? Should we be questioning everything? Should we be questioning the process of questioning? We really got going on that one. June, is religion killing us? Based on the book by Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. July, the anthropic principles, the various flavors. There's more than one anthropic principle. We talked about several of them. The general idea behind the anthropic principle is that the universe seems to be specifically designed to promote human life, or at least intelligent life, maybe human life. And does that imply the existence of a designer, because everything looks like it's tweaked and fine-tuned for us? That's one of the flavors of the anthropic principle. August, moral decisions, take three. We keep coming back to the question of morality a lot. This is the third Atheist Lounge we did with that as a topic. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we go into detail. September, do humans have free will? October, how far should atheists go to protect believers from themselves? November, doing good without God, community resources for atheists. And last month, December, coping with death, reincarnation, time, and parallel universes. Oh my. And the placard that I brought with me here is what we stick up in the lobby of the Portabella, just in case there's any passersby that might be intrigued by that night's topic. We say, come on down, everybody's welcome. So I'll pass this notebook around as well. They have handouts in them that are specifically intended to be distributed to everybody who shows up at the Atheist Lounge, and it contains a brief introduction to the night's topic. So the way the schedule works for these things is the announced meeting time is 7 o'clock, but we don't actually get going right spang at 7. Since we're meeting in the basement of a restaurant, we figure we should order food because that's what gets us the free meeting space. So we order food and drink, and we spend about the first half hour or so basically just being convivial and chowing down and so on. But somewhere around 7:35, 7:40 is the plates start getting cleared away and the conversation starts dying down, we open up with the drawing for the door prize. So everybody gets a ticket when they walk in, and then we draw a couple of numbers and we give people their choice of what sort of thing they would like to acquire for a door prize. So if you won the door prize last month, you would have your choice of a book, Letters from the Earth, a pocket copy of the U.S. Constitution, one of these snazzy Evolve Fish decals for your car. This comes incidentally from the nice folks at evolvefish.com, which has lots of product for free thinkers. And among other things that they have are bunches of cool bumper stickers. So we have these available also, and you can choose one of these if you won the door prize. Keep your rosaries off my ovaries. These are all bumper stickers. Nothing fails like prayer. Belief is no substitute for knowledge. What schools need is a moment of science. State and church, keep them separate. Why believe in a God? Just be good for goodness sake. Quotation from Thomas Paine, the world is my country, to do good is my religion. No gods, no masters. So these are all things that are available to be chosen from, and whoever wins the first prize gets their first choice, and then we have a second prize, and they get the second choice. Marcia.
You forgot the bumper sticker that says, Born Okay the First Time.
Yeah, we're out of those. Those turned out to be really popular, so so I didn't bring one for show and tell. That's the one I actually have on my car.
So which one of these topics really got the most lively discussions going?
Well, let me just finish off, first of all, talking about the process that we use, and then we'll launch into some of the things that we learn. After we have the drawing for the door prize, I do a brief presentation, generally about 10 minutes, where we hand out the handout for the day. I read the program description out loud. This is the first paragraph. It's also the one that we publish on the Madison Skeptics website describing the program. And then provide a little bit of background on the topic just to bring everybody up to speed, make sure we all have common terminology. We've got some acquaintance with the concepts that we're talking about. That presentation is generally, as I say, about 10 minutes, and I don't do much in the line of questions. I just sort of blabber as fast as I can to try and get the idea out. Then I turn the whole meeting over to my wife, and she does all of the moderated discussion, where people who have anything to say just raise their hand. She calls on them more or less in the order in which they raise their hands, although sometimes if somebody says something, she could see this immediately. Somebody else is really, really wants to get in, she'll sort of jump into the head of the line. And generally, everybody who shows up has to, can say whatever it is they want to say. They've got all, you know, they can. We don't pretend that you have to come to any conclusions. You know, it's not like a religious service where you start off saying, well, this is what we're trying to prove now. Let's see if we can find some evidence to support the conclusion we've already arrived at. This is one where we just say, well, none of us really know. Let's just, you know, find out what everybody thinks, kick a few ideas around. So it's very much a place of intellectual ferment and non-judgmentalism. The whole purpose is to have a discussion, not to nail anything down, not to have any final dogma that emerges from this. You know, this is what all atheists believe. In fact, you can't even say all atheists believe there is no God. Some of them don't even believe that. They just don't feel any need to have an opinion on it one way or the other. And so we're not all about belief. What we're all about is discussion, free interchange of ideas. And we have a lot of it. We typically have on the order of 20 people who show up for this thing. We find this sort of ironic because there's over 1,000 members of Madison Skeptics, and we think we put on a pretty good show, and we keep wondering, where is everybody? I mean, we really try to put on a good program that we think is entertaining and intellectually stimulating, and if there's 1,000 people out there who might be interested in it, where are they all? No idea, really. So I've distributed the list of topics for that we covered during the calendar year 2017. On the reverse side of that page is Atheist Lounges of 2018. And we've already got the first 10 months mapped out. We're still, we always solicit ideas from people who attend the Atheist Lounge as to what we can do for future meetings. And we've had a few suggestions that we've built into the existing agenda, but we're still looking for more for November, December of next year. But here's what we're looking at for the month for the year 2018. January, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. When is it appropriate to lie? For that one, we recommend reading the book Lying by Sam Harris. Sam, incidentally, thinks it's never appropriate to lie. So we're going to have a lot of fun talking about that one. February, just in time for Valentine's Day, Atheists in Love. March, Liberalism, Cultural Relativism, and Objective Morality. We keep coming back to morality quite often. April, Conspiracy Theories, Fact or Fiction. May, declaring your religious status and spreading the risk. If you're the only atheist in your community, are you a target? But if you have lots of people out there, are you just like one of the herd? June, consciousness discussed, which is a sort of springboard on the book Consciousness Explained by Daniel Dennett, where we're basically going to try and figure out what's consciousness all about. That's in July. The first AI you see there is short for artificial intelligence. Where are we going with artificial intelligence? Will it replace the meat brain? Will we all eventually end up being merely electrons in a computer simulation somewhere? Are we already? Who knows? August, no apologies to apologists. So a lot of Christian apologists have come up with what they consider to be counters to the frequently leveled criticisms against religion, and basically most of those apologists are fairly self-satisfied with the excuses they've come up with, but we think basically they're just fooling themselves. So we will talk about those. September, we will depart from our normal presentation and discussion format with a program called Read Your Screed, which is an open mic night. We basically invite people to bring something to read or a performance to put on or, you know, magic act, whatever. You know, just take like 5 minutes to just do an open mic presentation.
We had one of those recently, or was that just with the skeptics group? Or a separate one?
Somebody else did that.
Oh, okay.
Did we do it? okay. Oh, that was. I'm sorry. It was not an atheist lounge. That was a private home at the Madison Skeptics.
Okay.
It was a presentation under the heading of Madison Skeptics, but was not an atheist lounge as such.
Right.
Yeah, we had some interesting things there. Somebody brought bunches of little square pieces of paper and taught us how to do origami. God, I made it just the most atrocious looking little. What was it? A flower of some sort, yeah. Just. Anyway, yes, but that was, Madison Skeptics does more than just the Atheist Lounge, and we also have book discussions, presentations. A lot of us will attend Wednesday night at the lab that they put on down at the university. So there's a variety of things, and of course you can look at our website if you just look up Madison Skeptics, just Google that, it'll be the top hit. Finally, October, Superstition Ain't the Way, which is a phrase from the Stevie Wonder song Superstition. And we will have two little musical presentations there, one of which is the pleasant and I think largely harmless little tune from the 1950s, Got an Angel on My Shoulder, which I still think of very fondly. Got an angel on my shoulder, got a penny in my pocket, and I found a four-leaf clover, and I put it in my locket. And it's a very sweet little song, but of course it's just riddled with superstition from wall to wall. And then there's the Stevie Wonder song about superstition that says, you know, basically, it's BS, you should not believe this stuff, you know, you're just gonna cause yourself damage if you go down that road. So we'll have those two songs side by side and we'll talk about various superstitions. So as you can see, it's pretty eclectic. We have a wide variety of different topics. We try to keep the conversation in any given month focused on that month's topic, although given that we're dealing with some folks who are intellectually adventuresome, we tend to wander around a certain amount. Fortunately, our moderator does a pretty good job of keeping people on task.
We welcome speakers.
Yes, we do welcome new speakers. And we welcome everybody. Yeah, you don't have to be an atheist, you don't have to be a skeptic to attend these things. We're wide open, as it says on the sign here, all are welcome. And in fact, sometimes it's kind of interesting if we can get into a little give and take, a little back and forth, you know, that sort of livens up the discussion. So that was, that's an overview of how the Atheist Lounge works, sorts of things we've covered. At this point, I'll do what I normally do during the Atheist Lounge and say, okay, well, that's the presentation. Any questions?
Well, my question was, which one of these topics really brought out a lot of discussion?
Let's just take a look here. I think the one that we all ended up scratching our heads over more than anything else is, do humans have free will? Because it's an innately appealing concept, and most people like to think they do, but there's plenty of reason to think we don't. And so we went back and forth on that a lot. As I said, the objective of these lounges is not to arrive at any conclusions, but to sort of
ask questions
and illuminate the subject from several different angles. So we had a lot of backing and forthing on that one. I think that was probably the liveliest one we had. The one that I think caused the most puzzlement was the last one, coping with death, reincarnation, time, and parallel universes, because there are religious reasons for believing in eternal life. There are scientific reasons for thinking that we can come back more than once. There's medical reasons for thinking we may be on the verge of becoming just physically immortal, you know, if medicine advances fast enough. So we had a number of different angles that we could approach that topic from, all of which got back to a more fundamental question, which is, why do you want to live forever, which is one of the things that we covered back in February about eternity, a dang long time. And so some of these things, we recycle conversation from some of the earlier topics when we go around again. Now, I have to say, since this is not a required course, you can't count on the same people being there every time, so you can't always assume that everybody who's there has been at one of the earlier discussions, but a number, you know, there's a fair number of regulars that will recognize the topic when it comes around for the second go-around. The one on morality is always interesting. The particular one we did in August started off, instead of a presentation, we handed out a sheet of paper to everybody that had a scenario on it. It's called the Shrimp Contract. In fact, let me find it here and I'll just read it off for you. September.
Oh, I remember that one.
I thought it was September.
So there's a large number of people in the Skeptics
August.
Society, right?
Yes.
Like meetings or
a
something?
1,000. No, because it's a meetup group, it's just we have events and people who sign up to be notified of the events show up for the ones they feel like.
Okay.
There's no membership charge. You know, you just sign up for on the meetup website and you get notices of what we're up to. Sooner or later, you may find one that appeals to you.
It's all free. My wife and I are very interested in it. We've been to like 3 things in the last year.
How many?
They usually make 3.
Okay.
But there's typically something almost every week, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things going on, and it's really great. And I wish we could maybe when we retire we can.
Yeah, one of our members is a real big fan of trivia, and so he's found a place where they have, I think it's every other week, they have a trivia contest, and
There's two trivia groups.
Is there two trivia groups? Okay.
Yeah. One at Next Door, and then there's one at Rock Hound. Yeah.
Okay. And so.
And they usually at least plays, if not win, every week.
Yeah. So these are folks that say, okay, well, we know a lot of useless information. Let's show up at a trivia contest and express some of it. So that's a thing you can do if you're just signed up for the Madison Skeptics group. Here's the one where we talked about morality. I handed out this sheet of paper. Everybody got one, and then we had them fill out their responses and collected them. So here's the introduction, the Shrimp Contract. Life has been kind of hard lately along the Gulf Coast, where you own a restaurant, and you're getting desperate for cash, so you're thrilled when local socialite Delilah McQueen arranges to have her wedding reception catered at your place. The day before the wedding, it occurs to you that it would be ideal to serve fresh shrimp cocktail to the guests. So you call your most reliable source, Shrimp Boat Captain Boudreau, and he swings by with a contract, whereby he'll catch and deliver to you 1,000 fresh shrimp at $1 each, total $1,000. You both sign it and shake hands on the deal, and Boudreau walks out into the sunset, a happy man. That's the scenario. That's the background. Then there are seven possible scenarios as to what might have happened thereafter, and then the question is going to be asked in each case, how much should you in fact pay Boudreau? Scenario 1. Later that evening, you check your budget and realize you forgot to allow for wine, which will cost at least $2,000, so you can't really afford the shrimp after all. You contact Boudreau at home, explain the situation, and ask him to cancel your order. For that scenario, how much should you, in all fairness, pay Boudreau? And we give a blank line where people are not just encouraged, they're required to write in a fixed dollar amount, not just whatever he deserves, or I'm not sure. You know, you don't say things like that. You put in an actual dollar amount because we want to quantify the results. 2, same story as number 1, but you can't reach him that night, so we try again the following morning and reach him just as he set it out with 2 extra crew he's subcontracted for the extra work. Now how much do you pay Boudreau? And then there's several more scenarios along this line. And the purpose here is not to say that there's a right answer or wrong answer. The purpose is just to find out, well, what would people do? This is not one of these classic things, if the Nazis knock at your door and ask if you're hiding a Jew in your basement, what would you do? You know, that everybody's had a chance to think about. These are all things that are, might pop up in real life.
Oh, they do.
And they do pop up in real life. And it's not like there's a right answer or wrong answer. It's not like there's a societal expectation. You have to sort of make it up on the fly. So what do you come up with? And we give people like a couple of minutes to think about it. And then we just find out, well, what sort of reaction do you get? And, you think, well, it's all a bunch of atheists here. They should all think alike. No, not at all. They're all over the map.
That's an interesting one, because that's one that we would come up with a lot in manufacturing, and there's sort of like a standard way you would decide all those things.
Yeah. Well, there are no operation manuals for this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So you come up with decisions, and then if it's the sort of decision that you're comfortable with, ideally what you should do is write it down and leave it as a record for your successors so that they have some sort of sense of what company policy is.
The average of the answers you got.
Well, that in fact is a thing you could do.
The average or the median.
Right. So
whichever is lower.
So that was a fun one, I gotta say people really got into this one. We had a real lively discussion on this. It wasn't so much that everybody was defending their own point of view. What we got was a lot of people said, "Oh yeah, I never thought about it from that angle before." You know, like. What was the one here? It says, this is the sixth item. Boudreaux shows up on time, has got the thousand shrimp in their normal condition, to find you holding your head in your hands because Delilah has eloped, and her father called only an hour ago to cancel the reception. The McQueen family will not be paying you anything. So now what do you tell Boudreaux? You know, so a lot of people were just, and didn't really know how to answer that one. So
contract's
a contract, you know, deal's a deal. You know, that was a popular response, but not the only one. So anyway, this was a variation on our normal discussion kind of thing. It wasn't like we lacked discussion. We had plenty of discussion, but it was not the sort of thing where it was all springboarding off of the initial presentation.
By the way, with the father, a contract's a contract too.
Ah. Well, so any further questions?
I like the way you did all the sheets. How much time do you end up having to put into each one of these things?
Oh, not that much.
Some of them look more thorough.
Some of them are more thorough than others. I also take advantage of recycling a lot. The one that we did on, what did we title it? Anthropic Principles. I put in no time whatsoever putting that one together because I just repurposed something that I'd used for a science fiction convention back in 2008. I'd already done a handout that touched briefly on the anthropic principles. It generally dealt with the larger question of Fermi's paradox. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Fermi's paradox. It was formulated by the great physicist Enrico Fermi, the guy who's responsible for the first nuclear chain reaction. Back during World War II, and he and a bunch of his colleagues were out to lunch one day, and they got to thinking about things other than the war effort. And Fermi speculated, he said, well, you know, the universe has been around for, I think at the time, I thought it had been 12 billion years, and we now know it's even older than that. It's been around for about 12 billion years, and the galaxy's been here for a good 6-7 billion years, certainly long enough for life to have developed somewhere, intelligent life to have formed and to have spread throughout the galaxy. So where are they all? Why have we not heard from them? And that was the paradox. He said they must be out there somewhere, but we see no evidence of them. Why? Why is that? So that's been cited as Fermi's paradox. Well, because this was for a science fiction convention, I went on to list about a dozen different reasons science fiction has come up with for why we haven't heard from them. One of which is the one we talked about earlier, which is we're all just living in a computer simulation. There are no other people out there. But there's a bunch of other ones too. You know, like everybody kills them. You know, any time a civilization gets far enough advanced to develop nuclear weapons, they blow themselves up. Another one is they really are out there and they're actually interacting among us. It's just that they're so clever that we can't tell them apart from regular humans. And there's a variety of different answers that science fiction has come up with. So that's what I originally put this presentation together for. But one of the bits of information that I handed out as part of that presentation dealt with the anthropic principles. I thought, I'm just going to get this whole presentation handed out and say, turn to page 5. And you find a description of the anthropic principles and everything else is just sort of bonus coverage. So that one I spent no time putting together. The average thing that I put together for the presentation would take me, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours maybe, but sometimes I can just whip them off faster than that. But I try to throw in some quotations at the bottom of each one that are relevant to that particular topic. Let me just grab one at random here.
Or humorous.
Here's the one on questioning. Here's what they say about questioning. Here's one from Albert Einstein. The important thing is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. One cannot help but be in awe when he contemplates the mysteries of eternity, of life, of the marvelous structure of reality. It is enough if one tries merely to comprehend a little of this mystery every day. Never lose a holy curiosity. Kurt Vonnegut. Say what you will about the sweet miracle of unquestioning faith. I consider a capacity for it terrifying and absolutely vile. Jack Nicholson is Colonel Nathan Jessup in A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth! And then one from me, my all-time favorite graffito occurred back in the Vietnam War era. On a prominent billboard on University Avenue here in Madison, someone had spray-painted the ubiquitous countercultural sentiment, question authority. Right underneath it, someone else had added, why should I? So we try to throw in a few quotations to, you know, provide some pithy things you can take away from it.
So what do you do in your free time then?
This sort of stuff. No, I'm retired from state service, so I can, you know, the great advantage of being retired is you can do pretty much anything you want, and I like doing this sort of thing. The thing I do that's actually productive, as opposed to just, you know, spreading BS around, is I do database development for various nonprofit organizations. You know, things that they couldn't conceivably afford if they were paying me market rates.
Right. Very cool.
You were in IT before you retired?
I was actually in data analysis and statistics, and I ran across this really cool tool called FileMaker Pro. It's a database development package, and I really liked it. And it just sort of an art form.
Are they still updating it?
Oh, God, yes, every year. Okay. Yeah, we're up to FileMaker Pro 16 now.
Visual Basic 6.
No, it's well past that. It's just a marvelous piece of software, and I'm just very, very fond of it. I've got, about 24 clients here in the Madison area that I do a little bit of work for every now and again. So there's that, and I've got a bunch of other hobbies as well. But, no, do I have gainful employment? Not anymore. I'm sitting back collecting Social Security and my pension. Yay.
Richard, do the people that you volunteer work to know that you're an atheist? And do they care?
I don't generally make a secret of it, but it's not something that usually comes up, so I don't think it matters.
You don't wear that shirt to...
Oh yeah, I'm currently wearing a shirt for the benefit of those on the radio. I'm currently wearing a shirt that shows a picture of the former World Trade Center and has the John Lennon sentiment emblazoned over it saying, imagine no religion, because of course it was religious belief that led to that thing being blown up.
Right.
And
it's a cruciform image because of the sun coming between.
Yes, very, very, very clever piece of photography, I thought.
Yeah.
I wear stuff like this all the time, so it's not like there's any great secret about it, nor does anybody seem to care. You know, they're all about getting the job done.
Especially if you're not charging them.
Yeah.
Probably just delighted.
That goes a long way toward ingratiating yourself with people.
Is there any particular topic that you found brought someone for the first time because of the topic?
We generally have... Yes, that's true. I'm reminded that for the discussion on the anthropic principle, we got a person who's an astrophysicist who was particularly interested in it and contributed substantially to the discussion. And we really, really wish he would have kept coming back. You know, that was the only one he showed up for, but he was really useful. One of the other ones that we had, which is one of the few that we did not actually present ourselves, was the one on general semantics. One of our other members did that presentation, and he too has not been back since he did his presentation, so I'm not quite sure what to make of this. we get a new person or two just about every time. There's a certain amount of turnover. There's, I would guess, maybe a dozen regular folks who show up pretty much every month, and then three, four folks will circulate through every now and again, and then there's usually one or two that show up on a one-shot basis.
So is it the topics that pull them, or?
Mm. Oh, I'm also reminded that in the presentation last November, 2 months ago, Doing Good Without God, We got we had a guest presenter as a person here in the Madison area who's a longtime member of Madison Skeptics and an atheist who he's also a PhD in psychology and provides counseling to people who are trying to recover from various abusive situations, either drug abuse or physical abuse, so on. And he does it without using the standard religious-based 12-step program. So his presentation was very good. So.
Anyone get really angry at any of your programs?
Nope.
Walk out stomping? You're reminded of something else now.
I'm reminded of something else.
We did have one where there was somebody who was sort of a wolf in sheep's clothing who had attended, and she wasn't an atheist, and she took to social media after to complain about how we had bashed believers, she felt, and that we were also anti-corporate was another thing that she thought. I don't know why she got that impression. Richard may be anti-corporate, but his wife is not. And she was the moderator, and I thought that she kind of chimed in when Richard was bashing corporations. So I don't know why this person felt that way. She's a self-described Ayn Rand follower, and so I think she was trying to infiltrate the group, but she didn't do too much damage. And of course, we always welcome people of different, persuasions to come and check out our group.
Well, it's always fun to get people who disagree with basis.
I wanted her to keep coming back.
That's way more fun. Do you find that people are pulled by the topics, or are people pulled, or at least the core probably is pulled by the social connections?
I suspect that the folks who are there on a pretty much regular basis are just doing it out of habit at this point. it's the way religious people go to church every Sunday. It's not like they're particularly interested in that Sunday's sermon topic. They just say, oh, it's time to go to church, So that's what they do. But the folks that show up like on a one-shot basis, I'm pretty sure that it's the topic that has attracted them. As far as I can tell, even though we put this sign up in the lobby of the Portabella every time we have an Atheist Lounge presentation, it has never attracted anyone.
Well, people are coming for a different reason.
Right. Nonetheless, we continue to put the sign up. Even if it doesn't bring people, the fact that it says right across the top here in big letters, Atheist Lounge, means that there is a place where atheists, in fact, are doing stuff in Madison. So we are not hiding our light under a bushel. One of the things I've contended for many years, I've been active in the atheist movement for, 30 some odd years now. One of the things I've always contended is that we should be taking a leaf out of the playbook of the civil rights movement and the gay rights movement and the women's equality movement and just asserting ourselves, making ourselves visible, being a presence, and letting people realize, they may say, oh, atheists, they're terrible people. Well, did you know that your cousin Bob is an atheist? No, Bob, he's such a nice guy. I said, yes, atheists are nice people. But if you don't know anybody, it's not like we come with the visible markers of, this is something the gay rights movement discovered too. It's not like they come with different colored skin. It's not like they come with different, reproductive plumbing that's immediately visible. It's not like they're old or young or tall or short or skinny or fat. They're not visibly different from everybody else. So in order to realize that there are atheists that walk among us, we have to speak up and say, yeah, I'm an atheist. And once people realize that, yeah, I've known you for years, I never knew you were an atheist, and, well, does it change your opinion of me now that you do know? And well, no, you still seem to be a pretty nice person, but I'm just sort of surprised. Don't you believe in God? No, you want to talk about it? I can tell you why. And so you introduce the topic, and they already know you as being a decent person. They're more inclined to think better of atheists than they would be if all they had was whatever stereotype they've been confronted with their entire lives.
A couple of years ago, there was a discussion where it was brought up that atheists go out and volunteer but don't announce that they're atheists. But Christians go out there and volunteer and advertise the fact that they're Christians, and that it's basically, oh, Christians are all doing this wonderful work, but atheists aren't. No, atheists just aren't going around making that an issue of their work for volunteering. So it was a discussion of maybe atheists should be going out there volunteering and advertising the fact that they're atheists.
Well, in fact, that was one of the subjects that came up during our November presentation, Doing Good Without God, which is that an awful lot of people who are not religiously affiliated think, well, I am doing good in the community, but I'm doing it by means of supporting organizations like the Red Cross, which are not overtly religious. The Red Cross helps homeless people and people that are devastated by floods and tornadoes and so on, just like the Salvation Army does, but it doesn't come along with this agenda that you have to be exposed to if you're going to get some of their help. They're completely secular. And the biggest secular service organization of all, of course, is the government. And, you know, as far as I can tell, most of the atheists are perfectly happy to have things like FEMA, you know, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and they go out and provide all sorts of useful services for people that are sorely beset. We have unemployment compensation, we have workers' compensation. All of these are things that are designed to help people who are down on their luck for one reason or another, and they're run through the government. And so we think that, you know, my personal opinion, which I expressed at the Atheist Lounge and, you know, didn't get a whole lot of disagreement over it, my personal opinion is that if you want to do good in the world, support a decent democratic government. I don't mean capital D Democratic Party government. I mean one that listens to the will of the people and says this is what people actually want their government to do for them. And if you support that, you will be helping your fellow human beings. The classic example that we've experienced here in Wisconsin is there's a number of communities in the northern part of the state that were dependent on the lumbering industry, lumbering and paper. And if the local lumber mill closes down, pretty much the entire community goes into an instant depression, because everybody, if they don't actually work at the lumber mill themselves, they sell stuff to them. It's their friends and neighbors. The entire community is all of a sudden drained of that particular large source of income. And you say, well, you should help your neighbor. Well, your neighbor's in just as bad a shape as you are. Who all is going to help you? Well, if it isn't for the government, you know, and the local churches are in no better shape than anybody else, if it weren't for the government providing you with some assistance, that community would be in dire straits indeed. So the whole idea that, yeah, you should help your friends and family and neighbors, you know, it's a great idea. I'm certainly never going to say a bad thing about it. But it's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
Well, I agree with you about the government. I think there's a lot of other things you can also do, boots on the ground, or like you say, contributing to the Red Cross or other organizations as well.
Yep, and it's not like you have to wear your atheism on your sleeve, but neither should you, you know, feel ashamed of it or conceal it.
Right. Well, I have to confess that I bought a bumper sticker, and I decided not to put it on my car, just because I didn't want to have any problems if I drove into Missouri or anything. But it was...
Tape it to the inside of your rear window so you can take it off whenever you want to. Which is what I do.
It was all drive safely, there is no heaven.
Well, my Ford Aerostar minivan, which had lots and lots of surface area, it's a minivan. Had bumper stickers all over it. I think that by the time that thing finally drew nigh upon 300,000 miles, I think it was only the bumper stickers holding it together. And so I would drive that everywhere. And, you know, if anybody disagreed with any of those things, it was their problem, not mine.
Okay.
They just put another bumper sticker on.
Right. Anyway,
did
that
you
was,
ever collect randomly? Did bumper stickers ever appear?
No, it was all pretty much bumper stickers I had put on. I have a certain number of both left-wing and right-wing opinions, and I tried to segregate the bumper stickers on the left and right side of the car.
So the conservative opinions were on the left side of the car?
No, those were the more radical opinions. The stuff on the right side is, for example, I am sort of a technophile, and I see nothing wrong with nuclear power. And in fact, I think it's a pretty good idea. But there's an awful lot of folks on the part of the political spectrum where I normally hang out who are suspicious of nuclear power.
GMOs,
same thing. You know, one of the graphics I drew up, I'm still looking for a good atheist lounge to use it in, is called A Christmas Tree of Craziness, in which I show various ornaments on the Christmas tree getting farther and farther away from the center, and extreme lefty opinions and extreme righty opinions, which, as far as I can tell, are equally irrational, like the whole thing about, and this is fairly extreme one, is that AIDS is a plot of the CIA to kill black people. Well, it turns out that the people who are worried about that are generally tend to be pretty on far on the left end of the political spectrum. And then on the right side, you get this some sort of hazy thing about Benghazi. I've never really quite figured out what the problem is, but apparently that also is some sort of sinister conspiracy theory. I don't know exactly what. But neither one of these things seems to me to have much basis in rationality. It's just some sort of paranoid fear of somebody is up to something and I'm worried about it. And it's not the case that there's that these things are necessarily aligned in the political spectrum. Yeah. So we may get to talking about that one in April next year when we talk about conspiracy theories. We've got a bunch of others that we'll be talking about.
Are there any other activities of the Madison Skeptics you want to mention?
Well, the easiest thing to do, because any member can suggest any activity, the easiest thing to do would just be to look up the Madison Skeptics website. Just Google Madison Skeptics. It'll be the top hit. And just look at what's coming up in the coming calendars. We do have a book discussion coming up later this month, a couple weeks from now, I think, on the book Soonish by Zach and Kelly Wienersmith. It's 10 emerging technologies that will solve and or ruin everything. this week we've got Wednesday night at the lab. It's not like we're putting it on, but we think it's a matter of some interest to people. It's about vector-borne diseases. I think particularly they're talking about Lyme disease being spread by wood ticks, because that's a matter of some serious concern here in Wisconsin. May also talk about chronic wasting disease among deer. But we will find that as a matter of interest, because one of our book discussions that's coming up a couple months from now is the book Big Chicken, which talks about the abuse of antibiotics in general, but as it applies to the poultry industry in particular. And so that too, we'll talk about how do you deal with these things that are, you know, not the, you know, like the common cold that's been with us forever. They just seem to have become more virulent in recent times, and how do we deal with things like that? So the Wednesday night at the lab this week will be a nice grounding for the book discussion that we'll have in a couple of months. We're holding the book discussions, I think it's every other month now, to give people enough time to read the books.
And belong to all their other book clubs.
Yeah, and we discovered that the folks who tend to show up for these skeptics events, in general, in the Atheist Lounge in particular, tend to read an awful lot. There's a lot of readers here.
Any other questions for Richard? If not, thank you very much, Richard.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. So have you ever been harassed for being an atheist?
No.
Okay.
Largely,
nobody cares.
Well, I've been, I guess, proselytized, or, someone has tried to, that's not harassment, I don't think.
No.
But
I used to have folks that would show up at my door, and Jehovah's Witnesses, they always come with one older one and one younger one, who's apparently the apprentice. And they were offering me a copy of the Watchtower, and I whipped out one of my own tracts, which is the Sacred Book of Kush. And I said, "Well, swap, you know, I'll have one of yours if you have one of mine." No. And sort of backed away from it. So,
really?
So I guess I ended up harassing one of them. Yeah, I felt bad about it.
Well, I'd have to get put some of those on my front door.
Oh,
right. I noticed they don't go door to door anymore. You know what they do?
they go out on the city website, and if you're a homeowner, they'll send you a letter to come join them. And then they sign it like your friend Mary. Mary who? I don't have a friend named Mary. And if I had a friend named Mary, she wouldn't be going to Kingdom Hall.
We put a little library in front of our house, and that's where they're showing up now.
Oh, just
the track. Jehovah's Witness stuff, right?